You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job posts seen on other job sites. With Indeed sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Don't wait any longer. Speed up your hiring right now with Indeed. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/ARTS. Just go to Indeed.com/ARTS right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.
Hi, I'm Bede Hill, and this is The D Word, the show where we talk dementia. Glad to have you company again here on The D Word. My guest this week is author, playwright and public speaker Mary Crescenzo. Mary is passionate about arts engagement, and she'll be joining me this week. I'm talking arts engagement with my guest, Mary Crescenzo. But before we get on to the main subject, how did Mary start off in this area?
Well, I did not and have not had anyone in my family who has dementia, but I was applying for a job in between college and high school, and it was at a nursing home, and it said they were looking for, which is what it was called at the time, way back when, and they were looking for an arts and crafts teacher. And I had majored in art. I was about to study art education in college. And so I thought, well, I could do this. So I applied and they accepted me. And there I was, in this room with older adults who perhaps, now when I look back, I know some had dementia, some had different circumstances. And I just, in my heart, you know, I've been my whole life an artist, an interdisciplinary artist. I just knew by instinct that this would bring joy to these people. And so, I learned a lot and I loved it. And then, jumping maybe 20 years from that after a career in teaching and in music and in radio and theater, and also as a teaching artist, where I kind of was drawn to older adults for some reason, well, frail, and suddenly there was an art exhibit by a friend of mine who, with his father, began painting because his father had Alzheimer's and he couldn't communicate with him, and so he tried that. He contacted the Arts Council, which I was a member of, a teaching artist member. He started working with people. He had a show of the work. And I entered the room. I wasn't surprised at the amazing paintings and unique artwork I saw, but I was in awe. And so I said, you've got to train me in your program. And he did. And that's how it all began. But way back when, that as a teenager, that was, I think, the spark in me.
Yeah, I think we all kind of get those kind of sparks, don't we? I mean, looking at the arts, I mean, do you think it's something that's often ignored in dementia care because people have this kind of misguided view of what people living with dementia are capable of?
Yes, I still see that. I saw it truly, way back when. I would go into a facility and I was asked, what are you going to do? Or are you a volunteer? The education of this concept of arts engagement wasn't even a term in the 90s. But yes, even today I see that. And so my mission has been, at this point as a speaker and an author, to share with caregivers, professional, personal, even activity directors, or sometimes they call them enrichment, life enrichment directors, that anyone can do this, even a person with Alzheimer's. And yes, there are myths that still continue, but once they see how music, art, storytelling, movement, dance can be placed before a person who is usually in front of a TV or worse, then they understand and they begin to realize, they see this, and the joy is spread, not just within the person who's painting or singing, but for everybody around.
Yeah, you know, arts engagement now has become a word. Tell us a little bit about it.
Well, arts engagement has always been person-centered work. And if you are working with someone, you're not just putting an activity in front of them. For example, like everyone has to do the same thing. Like the extreme would be gluing macaroni to a paper plate. Okay. If we're going to paint, then I'm going to focus on each individual and see where they come and how they come to me. So I like to call arts engagement an arts experience if it's done in that way, not just an activity. And so it's person-centered. There's fluid guidance from the person that's doing it, whether it's me or a caregiver. And there's no judgment. It's about process, not product. And that for me is arts engagement. Now, there's art therapy as well, and that involves arts engagement, but it does focus more on clinical and diagnostic tools. But in both cases, there is a focus and a drive for quality of life for persons who are doing the art, and just kind of an empowerment.
Yeah, you know, I guess the way you explain it is not only the person living with dementia as well. You know, the whole family can be involved, caregivers can be, anyone can be involved.
Absolutely, and I love when kids get involved because they don't have the inhibition yet. Maybe no one's told them that they can't do it, which is another story, but which affects everyone for maybe the rest of their life until they realize everyone can be creative. But when you bring kids in, they're uninhibited, and Alzheimer's, persons with Alzheimer's and dementia, often have lost that inhibition also. So they just jump in, and when kids are around, it just makes the event even more exciting.
The station that makes you feel good. UK Health Radio. The station that makes you feel good.
We're getting loads of positive reaction from the new UK Health Radio podcasts. All the usual shows are covered and are available on all the major podcast platforms. I'm talking arts engagement with my guest, Mary Crescenzo. And one thing about the arts is that it can have a real intergenerational appeal. And once children get involved, it takes the process to a new level, as kids are non-judgmental and are happy to play with anyone.
Exactly. And I think that one of the things I hear from caregivers is that, or carers, that, oh, I can't do this, I can't do art. And they think, well, I can't do art. How can I engage in someone else, especially with dementia, doing art? And I always ask them this question. I say, is there someone in your life in the past, a parent, a teacher, a peer, a sibling, who told you you can't sing, you can't draw? And the answer is always yes. And so that stifling then grows. And so I work with these persons and just talk with them and show them that that's not the case. We all have the creative spirit in us, and it's there to be sparked and touched, and everyone can do it. But that often, I hear that often, and it's unfortunate, but that's one of my goals, too, to change that.
Yeah, it's interesting. I mean, you know, what you say about in childhood, you're kind of pigeonholed into you can do this, you can't do that, you do this, can't do that. And it's kind of, you know, I can look at my own life and think that, you know, that's happened perhaps to me on certain things. And it tends to scare you off that subject. But also, I think the word art can be a bit misleading for people because it involves a whole umbrella of different activities, doesn't it?
Yes, absolutely. And I often find that people think that art is just visual art when it is a combination of so many different creative modes. And you can interplay them. When I do painting with a person with dementia, then I play music in the background and storytelling and going for a walk. I mean, it goes even beyond art. As I'm sure you know, there's horticulture, therapies, there's comedy, laughter therapies, and the art of gardening. I like to say that conversation is an art, the art of conversation. And sometimes when you're working with someone with dementia or living with someone with dementia, there's a conversation, but to you, it doesn't make sense, or it sounds like gibberish. And I'm not saying that in a pejorative way, but it's a way that you just don't get it. But that's when you stop and say, respond, no matter what they're saying. Just okay, you're my sister, and maybe you're not. Then be that sister. Start talking about how the weather or anything else. And now you're in creative conversation. But isn't that better than just staring at this person and then dwelling on the past, which I know it is difficult not to think about the life you've shared. But if you can think about Alzheimer's and dementia as a dance, then think they lead and we follow. And let's enter their world, their planet, the title of my book, The Planet Alzheimer's Guide. Enter into that world and you will find yourself living in that present moment with them. And it's going to feel better because you're not fighting the disease.
Yeah, you brought me nicely around to your book. The title, I think, is great because it really sums up a lot in terms of, you know, you do have to put yourself in someone else's world and suddenly forget, you know, not try and pigeonhole that person into your world because, you know, that just doesn't work. So I think, you know, the Planet Alzheimer's is a great title because I think it says a lot more than just the couple of words. Within the book, you've got 8 ways art engagement can help. I mean, can you take us through a few of those?
Sure. Well, I tried to go through the different art forms, but there's also other ways. So there's painting and drawing. And I suggest watercolor for painting. It's easy to wash and work with. Drawing, I would suggest markers, washable markers. These work well. Even if there is a fine motor skill that is lacking, still you can still see designs and shapes, whether it's with a wide marker or a small one. And I would never say don't offer a pencil. I had a gentleman who was working with me, and he walked in the room. He was a doctor, and he walked in the room and said, I don't want to paint. I don't want to use those tools. Do you have a pencil and a ruler?" I said, sure. And so I gave him pencil and ruler, and he proceeded to draw with all the perspective and detail that was there, the corner of the room. So I'm going to again follow that person's lead. Chapter two, is about language, music, and movement, sing-alongs, recitation, recall. Just put on the music from that person's life, when they were younger, different stages in their life, and just see what happens. They'll start singing. You'll start singing. And even instrumental music, as I mentioned, while there are tasks or even routines that you have to do. These are all calming and yet stimulating effects. And music touches certain parts of our brain, various parts of our brain, and as all art does. So that's chapter two. Three is the 4 R's, rhyme, rhythm, recitation, recall. Again, storytelling. Look at photographs, maybe personal ones, or even an art book, or if you can and able to go to a museum. Or a lot of museums have their images online, online museum images for persons who can't go. And also some museums literally have a days where persons with dementia can visit. So that is also another thing. And when you look at pictures, like, don't say, who is that? Do you remember this person? Maybe just say, what's this person doing? How do you think that person's feeling? So it's open-ended types of storytelling. Also, you can read poetry from that person's life that they may have studied. This doesn't happen anymore in the United States, but there was a time, not much at all, where you had to memorize poems and read them back. And in the era that those persons lived, perhaps that was the case. You can start a poem and they're going to throw in a line or two. So one of my mottos is see what happens. Just see what happens.
What a pleasant surprise to hear your voice on the phone. Know your timing's just right. You caught me all alone. I've been running all day. I'm glad that you got through. Funny, I was just thinking of you. To make sense of our past, but the years have been kind and heartaches. Exactly the same as it was all those lifetimes ago. And then just for a laugh, I played that old song we once knew. Just thinking of you.
One of my favourite albums of last year was Brennan Lee and Obsessed with the West. And from it, that was one called I Was Just Thinking of You. Thanks to all those people who've contacted us here on the D Word with ideas about who they'd like to hear on the show. We're on social media at Radio TDW on Twitter, the Radio TDW Facebook resource page, which also contains loads of useful information, or of course by email to tdwradio@gmail.com. I'm chatting with my guest, Mary Crescenzo. As well as her work in arts engagement, Mary is a successful author. Her book, The Planet Alzheimer's Guide, is a really interesting read, and it introduces readers to eight ways in which arts engagement can help and can be even more powerful when you engage medical professionals in the process.
So, also, again, I mentioned the art books. That's chapter number 4 in my 8 ways the arts can transform the life of your loved one and your own. And engaging in family, which we mentioned, an intergenerational approach. And then also include the support and medical staff in the arts experience. Now, you may be saying they don't have the time, they don't have the interest. But you could start by just saying, this is what I did today with my loved one, if it's at a facility, a care community. And then they will become aware of this. And that will open up the door to acceptance and understanding and encouragement to bring art there. Or if it's a family member that says, oh, this person never painted, they won't ever do this. Well, again, bring them into the fold, so to speak, of the art experience. It's only going to be a positive response when they see what can be done and hear what can be sung, for example. Another thing I like to do is display and celebrate art of the person who made it. If you're at home with your loved one who has dementia, frame the artwork, put it on the wall in different rooms. People will see it. It's become a conversation piece. It's a wonderful thing to have that up there. And if your loved one is in a care community, then hang it in their room or ask, can we hang some of these in the hallway? And maybe if they have an activities director who is doing this type of thing, then you can say, why don't we hang these? And I would always say, ask, where is the activity director? I'd like to meet them. What are you doing? Are you familiar with this type of thing? Because you are part of the care team, right? And you have the right to say, I think this would be helpful to the person that I love and care for. And then my last thought is, in the book, is self-care. Caregivers, find even 5 minutes to get a journal, and just do some creative writing. And I got this idea from my experience with persons with dementia, because when I first started working, I would come home crying and so upset from what I saw around me and the experience itself. And so I used to write and started writing in the voice of the people that I met, as persona poems, what I thought they might be thinking, maybe a line that they said that, you know, sometimes persons with dementia come out with these profound statements in the middle of something that may not make sense. So from observation and my own creativity, I began to write in their voice to give them voice. And that turned into my play, Planet A, about the inner world of Alzheimer's. And then I expanded that to the inner voices of staff and family members. But writing really helped me to breathe and know I could go back the next day and do my work, do my job. So as a caregiver, just take a few minutes and think of, like, just look around. Look at a flower. Look at the sink, your hands. Just look at an object, think of a person, place, or thing, and just put your pen on the paper or your hands on the computer and give yourself, put on a timer, start with 1 minute and don't stop. Don't take your hand off the paper. And that might seem scary, but just write whatever comes to mind. And you'll be surprised that your feelings are now given a safe place to do this. And even if you write, I don't want to do this. Why didn't Mary tell me to do this? This doesn't make sense to me. Write whatever comes to mind, but try to focus on that person, place, or thing. And it really will help you to feel, here is my place to share all the complex feelings I'm having. And you don't have to share it with anyone, or unless you want to. So that those are all the different ways that I feel creativity can really help not just the person with dementia, but the family, the carers, and everyone around, because there is joy in the midst of the darkness of this disease. I've seen it, and I know that it can happen over and over again.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good. UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
I'm chatting to my guest, Mary Crescenzo, about arts engagement. Like me, Mary believes in thinking outside the box and is not afraid to try new things just to see what happens. A lesson I learned when I was managing activity groups, and I'm pleased to say 9 times out of 10, things worked out really well.
Absolutely. And if for some reason it doesn't work, they're not open to this, or they become agitated or whatever. If it doesn't work, redirect into a different activity, or just go to the garden, or just say, okay, we'll do this another time. And don't give up, because sometimes, as you say, you know, it 9 out of 10 times, but if it doesn't work, that doesn't mean it can't happen on another day. And I suggest you don't do this during meal times. You don't do it during the sundowning period, the dusk. Don't do it during grooming times. Just find that time when they're not napping. Just whenever you feel that it might work, that's a good time to let this happen. It's more conducive to the creative spirit.
Yeah, and I guess, you know, the one advantage of the creative spirit is that we know dementia is a journey, but, you know, it can pick up any point in that journey, can't you? You know, you can adapt it quite simply to pick up any point on that journey.
Absolutely. And to speak to that, I've worked with persons in various stages of this disease. And you can find things that you can do, even at a very late stage when a person cannot move, cannot even hardly eat. You can play music and you can just be in that space. So again, let's see, you know, what happens. That's one of my mottos. And yeah, just see and see what happens.
Yeah, you know. Absolutely. I think it's, you know, it's a great way to look at things. But also, I mean, you know, even with all your experience, and I know when I was working in it, you learn a lot as well. It's not one way street.
No doubt about that. No question. I've learned so much from the people that I've worked with. I've learned to live in the present. I've learned to just be in the moment. You learn so very much. And I'm so grateful for all the rich wisdom that I've received from doing this. I also want to mention, when you're working with someone that you've had a lovely relationship with and you're going to jump into this, but what if you are a person who did not have a good relationship with this person? That may seem harder to engage in this way. And my only suggestion with that is to see if it is possible in the time you have together to see this person as they are now, which may not even be the same personality that, or whatever that you had dealing with before, and just bring yourself again to that moment, that present. And you may have a very new and very different and even positive experience with this person who now has this disease, who now has a different way of being. So try that.
Yeah, you know, I guess it's tough because, yes, you know, in terms of your book, you're looking at another planet. You're looking, you know, almost restarting a relationship,
yes,
with a completely new person, which, you know, it's a tough one for caregivers to take on board.
Yes, but these are all complementary therapies, a therapy to those everyday routines and the medicine and whatever else is happening. But yeah, it is not an easy task, but what else do we have? We have to be in that present moment. So yeah, see if you can find something in that time where there is that light, that joy.
And I think, you know, going back to what you were saying earlier in a conversation, the part that can be played by professionals and professional caregivers should not be underestimated. But also, as you say, you know, it should be pointed out to them how advantageous to them going through this process could be.
Yes. Yeah, absolutely. And I like what you said. They should not be underestimated. They have enormous challenges, as anyone does as a carer. But if they can understand that, what can they do in the middle of all these routine chores and duties that will give them a break as well? And that's, to me, that's the arts that can really just give you a nice breath of a new experience in all of those things that you have to do. And that's why I wrote the book, because I wanted people to know what I knew and to do what I discovered can be done. And also, I also like to speak as a public speaker, because I want, again, to show, and even in workshop form, to show that you can do this, whether you're a personal caregiver, professional caregiver. I just know that, This will help. And often when I speak, people will say, you know, I wish their loved one had passed. I wish I knew this. I wish I knew these things at the time I was caring for my husband or whoever it might be. And so that's why I feel at this time that we have with the people that we care for, what else can we do to enrich their lives, give them dignity, and also for ourselves as well.
Yeah, I think it's a holistic approach for everybody, yes, that's involved. It's interesting that you turned it into a play, which obviously is another form, art form. What kind of reaction did you get from that?
Well, when I first staged it in a very small black box theater in New York, the play was even not as long as and full as it is now. It was a dark room, and I heard people weeping in this room at the end, and they left. And I thought, wait a minute, I can't let people leave this way. I have to do more. And so every time since, when this play is staged or read, I always have someone from one of the Alzheimer's, either associations or society or whatever group there are, because there are various groups, to come in and do a Q&A after the play. And I find that the persons from these professional organizations, they are happy to see what I've done. And more than that, they say, you've touched all the aspects. You're right. You're spot on. And, you know, sometimes a little intimidating, because when they come in, I'm thinking, are they going to like tell me that this is not the way it is? But I feel confident that I've experienced this. So they give a positive response. The audience wants to talk. They want to ask questions. And for me, it's become like a public forum, because there are myths about, as you said in the very beginning, for dementia, about dementia. And the play also redefines those things, as well as sitting together with a group, they're understanding it better. They feel they can talk about it. So the response has been really, really a good response. And we also did it in New York in a different location, and it was sponsored by one of the Alzheimer's Association chapters in New York City in Manhattan. And so they invited, the public could come, but staff could come, and they encouraged everyone to come. And also persons with younger onset Alzheimer's also attended. And then I was also like, okay, these are going to be my best critics because they live this. And they stood up at the end and just, they felt so good that they and the disease is recognized and it's not something we have to hide. I kind of see it like how we never talked about, we didn't want to talk about cancer or AIDS, and Alzheimer's still has that kind of thing, and maybe because of fear. And so it's been a really good response. I've expanded it. I also do it as a benefit for different organizations. It's for education, but it is also a theatrical experience. And we do it, we cast it age blind. So there are people from age in their 20s to their 80s who are the actors. And so, again, this is another way that I can share what I know and to open up the awareness to others.
Yeah, and I think it's so important that people find innovative ways. Now we have a lot of technology, we have a lot of ability to just get people talking. You know, that's the D word. That's why we're here, to just really take off those myths and get people talking. And I think because of technology, we're in a really good place to be able to do that now. But some people still need a bit of a push to get there.
Right. And Pete, may I ask you about your first entry into this world?
Yeah, I got a 2-year contract with the Alzheimer's Society to manage activity groups for people living in the community with dementia. At that stage, I hadn't had much contact with dementia at all. But unfortunately, my mother-in-law was diagnosed, so I had a family connection from fairly early to working on. When my contract came to an end, I come from a public health background, and I'd never heard any of my public health colleagues talking about dementia, the way they talk about heart disease, diabetes, etc. And I thought, it's just not right. We need to talk about this. This is a massive public health issue. How can I do it? I had a bit of a background in radio, so I thought, well, that's one method of, that I can do to try and get the word out there. So that's how it all began in 2019. I had help from Laurie LeBay, who does Alzheimer's Speaks. I talked to Laurie quite a bit at the beginning because she, for me, pioneered this kind of form of communication starting back in 2013. So, she's a good friend and she's been a great use in getting the D word underway.
Yes, yes. Well, first, thank you for sharing that story with me. We all find our way, whichever that may be, into this. And it changes. I know it changed my life. I think it changes our lives. Laurie LeBay is great on Alzheimer's Speaks. She is what I say, all things Alzheimer's. And she's really expanding her program. And I have the honor of doing a segment with her quarterly, which is on arts and dementia. And we interview people who are living with the disease and who are doing various forms of art. And who better to hear from a person who is living this and also creating art as part of their life? So, yeah, Laurie's great. Yeah,
absolutely. I must get her back on the show because we have a really good chat when I get Laurie on the show. Well, Mary, I'm afraid time is pressing on and has brought us to an end. It's been fascinating. Yet another facet of the dementia world that I think needs to get out there and people to think about. And I think you're doing a brilliant job. I know you've won awards as well. Congratulations on those. And you're doing a great job in, you know, what you're doing. And I hope you will keep on doing it.
I will. And thank you for this program that you have, which also spreads the word. And it was my great pleasure to talk to you, Pete. Thank you.
My thanks to Mary for a fascinating insight into arts engagement. Her book is called The Planet Alzheimer's Guide, and there's plenty more information on her website at marycresenzo.com. That's C-R-E-S-E-N-Z-O. Well, that's it for this week. Thanks as always to Angela, my production assistant. Next week, I'm going to be talking music with Nina Clark from Musical Walkabout. So until then, thanks for listening and take care now.